Welcome to the Weekly Digest, a podcast by News 24, South Africa's most trusted news brand. Every Friday, we invite you into our studio to listen to conversations about some of the week's top stories. Mihlali Ntsabo is our host.
In today's episode, News 24 senior politics reporter Zinhle Mahlatsi gives us the full details on why the Congress of the People terminated Colleen Makubela's membership. We then cross to senior investigative journalist Carl Cowan, who's in the Ukraine, where President Volodymyr Zelensky is updating the press on efforts to end its ongoing conflict with Russia. On a lighter note, News 24 Deputy Lifestyle Editor Kaunda Selusho gives us a sneak peek into this week's edition of Hello Weekend. On Monday, the Congress of the People, or COPE, announced that it was terminating Colleen Makubela's membership with the party.
When you form a political party, you say to the people what you want to do for them, and they vote you on for you on the basis of what you promise them. Now, they are not married to you for life. In their own mind is a condition. If you don't do that which satisfies us, we are going to leave.
COPE said Makubele, who was the City of Johannesburg's council speaker, was removed because she had violated the party's constitution by joining a new multi-party pact, the South African Rainbow Alliance, SARA. Posters of this new party were identified across Johannesburg with Makubele's face on them. On Wednesday, Makubele, alongside leaders of the various religious and civil groups and small political parties, held a media briefing formally introducing SARA.
An alliance is a pact comprising of minority parties like this, faith-based organizations, South African National Council, Christian Forum. We also have alliance partners as traditional leaders, Rolesa, that have pledged their allegiance and their loyalty to us. We have many churches that we have been meeting with that are committed to supporting SARA and to ensuring the success of SARA in 2024.
Zinhle Mahlatsi, senior politics reporter at News 24, details why COPE did not agree with Makubele's political move. Zinhle, on Monday, the Congress of the People announces that it has terminated the membership of Colleen Makubele, who happens to be council speaker in the city of Johannesburg because she, according to the party, had breached the party's constitution by joining the South African Rainbow Alliance. What has her response been?
Colleen Makubele held a briefing on Wednesday in Sandton where she appeared alongside other party leaders from very small parties that are relatively unknown. And she was angered, she was sad. She said, at some point, she even shed tears regarding this particular matter.
Mm.
She thinks it was an injustice, but she doesn't believe that she wants to challenge her termination from the party.
Right.
So the reasons given for her removal from COPE is that she had tried to make the party, combine with another political party, right? Which is against any political party's constitution, but particularly COPE's. So she was fired because of that. Makubele's face had been appearing on posters of an organization nobody pretty much knew about.
Yeah, throughout the week.
Yes, throughout the week. So everybody was curious what is going on.
And what exactly do we know about the South African Rainbow Alliance?
She said it's an organization where small political parties come together to coalesce or form a coalition with the sole aim of contesting the 2024 elections together as a grouping. Mm-hmm. The difference here, it's very similar to what the DA in Action SA launched in August called the Moonshot. Those parties are going to contest separately, and then they're going to go into this election with hopes of having as many voters as possible to show up their ability to negotiate should there be a need for a coalition in it after the 2024 elections. But this alliance of the South African Rainbow, of the South African Rainbow Alliance launched by Coleen Makubele, these parties are doing away with contesting on their own. So they'll be contesting under this umbrella group. So SARA will be registered as a political party of its own, and everybody's going to work, go out, do the groundwork, and try to get as many people to vote for SARA. But with the idea that they're supporting multiple parties. It's over four parties.
Mm-hmm.
One that I can pinpoint that a lot of people might recognize is the National Freedom Party.
Mm-hmm.
This party was formed by Zanele Magwaza Msibi a few years ago after she departed from the IFP. So it's a very, it's a very cultural party, similar to the IFP. It's got a lot of support in KZN. So that's one of the most popular parties that is part of this. That's the only popular party that's part of this organization that anybody would know.
I think another question that people now have is that council has no speaker. What is happening now in that regard?
Yes. So the Joburg Council has no speaker because Coleen Makubele has been removed. And Joburg is an interesting municipality because it's also similar to other municipalities across the country, but it does not have a majority. So the city at the moment is currently governed by the ANC in a coalition with the EFF and the Patriotic Alliance and several smaller political parties. So these parties have like a coalition agreement. The main power positions in the council or in the leadership of the Joburg politically are held by the EFF, the ANC, and the Patriotic Alliance. The smaller political parties, such as the AIC, the UDM, ATM, who are also in the same coalition, they divide all the chairperson positions that are found in councils that pretty much govern the daily running of council. So the speaker position is one of those positions that can go to any of the smaller parties, including the mayoral seat. So at the moment, Kabelo Gwamanda, who's an Al-Jamaa councillor, is the mayor of Joburg.
Right.
So this speaker position will likely be filled by a person from a very, very minority party within the Joburg council. They have the power now because of the alliance that they have with the ANC and because Joburg has no majority. So at the moment, there's a meeting that's expected to happen. People are still mulling. There's a lot of back talk. Who's going to replace Coleen Makubele? But it has to be someone who has stature, who's known, who can take the ground running.
Zinhle Mahlathi, senior politics reporter at News 24. And to follow a full update and coverage on the story, do visit news24.com. It's been over a year since Russia launched an assault on Ukraine, killing thousands and leaving millions displaced, but some fleeing for their lives. This week, Ukraine has been hosting journalists from 10 African countries to give an update on peacemaking efforts. News 24 senior investigative reporter Kyle Cowan gives us the latest from Ukraine's capital city, Kyiv. Kyle, Russia's assault on Ukraine has been ongoing for over a year now, and one would imagine that the way of living for many civilians has since changed. Could you paint a picture for us on what you've seen in Kyiv this week since your arrival?
Yeah, I think it's very clear that people living in Kyiv and other parts of Ukraine, especially Odessa that I also visited, have adapted to what is a new way of life.
Right.
You know, in the beginning of the war, we saw hundreds of people sheltering in the metro stations, sometimes for days on end, weeks, sleeping there, eating there, as, you know, Russian bombs pounded Kyiv. And at the moment, air alerts have gone off almost every day since I've been here, at various times during the day, and people are no longer rushing to the shelter every time. What they do is they first check what type of threat it is. If it is a plane carrying a ballistic missile, for example, then they would only go to the shelters if, you know, if the alert tells them that a missile has actually been fired or something like that. They'll check social media, especially Telegram. And if it's drones, most people likely won't go to the shelters. It's actually quite strange because life in Kyiv especially is going on pretty much as normal. You know, there are traffic jams, you know, clothing stores opened new shops for the first time in the country just a couple of days ago, and it caused us to be 20 minutes late because of traffic jams leading to one shopping mall. People are walking on the streets, buying coffee, chatting, and I visited the Holodomor Museum, which is a monument to the 1932-1933 Soviet-imposed famine that killed as many as 7 million Ukrainian people by some estimates. And there was a couple sitting on a bench with this fantastic view of the Dnieper River. And the air raid siren had gone off, and it stayed active for quite a while. And they didn't move. They sat speaking quietly and looking at this fantastic view of the city.
Right. So on Tuesday, Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky held a briefing with a group of journalists from 10 African countries, where he also spoke about his meeting with South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, who happened to be part of the six African leaders who had visited Ukraine in June this year and proposed a peace plan. But apparently that plan has not yet materialized. What do we know about this plan, and including possible proposed timelines of when it was meant to be implemented?
Yeah, so processes like these usually don't have any solid timelines. The reality is that, you know, because Ukraine and Russia are at war, they're not really talking to one another. So any process around, you know, even sitting down to discuss peace or methods to get there is quite complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Ukraine, for example, will not enter into any discussions with Russia if they have to make any territorial concessions.
Right.
This is a non-starting issue for Ukraine, and I think it's quite understandable. But as far as the African Peace Initiative is concerned, we are seeing some developments that are being attributed to this visit by President Ramaphosa and others. You know, the return of some Ukrainian children who were deported by Russian soldiers. As many as 18,000 children were taken from occupied Ukrainian areas to Russia. And this is why the International Criminal Court issued a warrant of arrest for Vladimir Putin because of these deportations. And we've seen, you know, as recently as October, four children were returned through diplomatic efforts by Qatar. And we are yet to see, you know, prisoner exchanges. This was the other issue that President Ramaphosa and President Zelensky agreed that it would be a good way to open discussions with Russia around these two issues, because it's obviously in Russia's interest to get some of their prisoners back so that they can probably send them back to the front lines. Exactly the same for Ukraine.
Right.
And in terms of, you know, the children being returned, I think this gives Russia a ways out of the ICC arrest warrant to say, you know, we were just keeping these children safe, and now look, we're returning them. We're not being unreasonable. But of course, you know, the entire peace initiative hinges on Ukraine's peace formula. It's a 10-point peace formula that Ukraine has put in front of many nations in the world. As many as 140 have supported this formula, and it deals with a variety of issues, but most importantly, you know, territorial sovereignty and guarantees for Ukraine that Russia will withdraw all of its troops. And during our discussion with President Zelensky, he said, he was quite forceful in saying that all Russia has to do is comply with one point on this 10-point peace plan, and that is to withdraw all its troops, and then they can talk about all these other things later. So the attitude now is, you know, we've tried this diplomacy thing over the last decade with Russia, and it hasn't really worked. And now we are, you know, the subject of a full-scale invasion under false pretenses. Why should we trust Russia to honor any agreements that we sign? And getting over that hurdle, I think, is going to be enormously difficult.
Right. And what kind of impact does this ongoing war in Ukraine have on South Africa and the greater African continent, considering the fact that Africa is the biggest importer of Ukrainian grain?
Yeah, so, you know, grain is obviously one of Ukraine's main export items, and it's on the top of the agenda during most bilateral or, you know, any sort of diplomatic discussions. Ukraine can produce about 120 million tons of grain a year, and they only use about 28% of that for the domestic market.
Sure, right,
the rest,
right.
You know, about 30% is exported to European countries, and the rest goes to Africa. And it's been enormously difficult for Ukraine to keep you know, its exports going with constant Russian bombardments in port cities on the Black Sea. And, you know, they've taken some extraordinary efforts to make sure that some ships do actually can deliver grain to Africa. You know, we also had a meeting with the Prime Minister, Dennis Schmiel, and he was of the opinion that, you know, about 400 million people in Africa depend on Ukrainian grain for food. So Ukraine is telling Africa that, you know, we want to be your partners in food security. We want to look beyond the current status quo and say, what can we do to prevent future occurrences where Russian aggression anywhere in the world can have an impact on food security like this?
Right.
You know, Ukraine has accused Russia of basically using food security as a weapon, as blackmail to, you know, against African nations. And we have seen this where, you know, Russia is on the one hand responsible for attempting to sabotage Ukrainian grain exports while offering to deliver grain to the same African countries who are suffering as a result for free. And this is quite cynical, obviously. And, you know, I don't think it's something that we talk about quite often, but grain exports are one of the key diplomatic footholds that, you know, some of these countries in Europe can gain in Africa. But Ukraine is looking beyond that as well. They are trying very hard to establish a bigger presence on the African continent. They are opening at least 10 embassies at a cost of about $25 million over the next year. And they are genuinely trying to export some of their greatest achievements, like digitalization of government, for example. Ukraine is one of the most digitalized governments in the world, and they are willing to bring that kind of technology to Africa. But most importantly, they are also willing to share information and their expertise in dealing with the Wagner mercenary group,
right,
that has a strong presence in some African countries and, you know, have been accused of being behind some coup d'etats that have been going on. So I think there's, you know, really valuable opportunities for Ukraine and also quite valuable opportunities for Africa to not only ensure food security, but benefit from other technologies as well.
Considering South Africa's quote-unquote neutral stance on the Russia-Ukraine assault, one obviously would assume that this has severely somewhat strained relations between the Ukraine and South Africa. Did Zelensky perhaps make any mention of what Ukraine's future relations with Africa look like?
Yeah, so President Zelensky, as well as his foreign minister, Dmytro Kuleba, have both painted a pretty rosy picture, you know, in the past engagements that we've had in the past week with them. And it's true that, you know, diplomatic relations between South Africa and Ukraine were quite distant and cold, to use Kuleba's words, especially in the immediate aftermath of the invasion in February of 2022. But since then, there's been a warming of the hearts, according to Ukrainian officials, at least. What we were told by Minister Kuleba is that President Ramaphosa and President Zelensky sat down in June, after the official meetings had ended, and sat down for dinner together.
Right.
And they were able to speak for quite a long time, a little bit more informally. And it looks like quite a great relationship was struck up at that point. And I think the two have a genuine good feeling about each other.
Right.
During that sort of informal conversation, it was agreed that the peace delegation will go to St. Petersburg to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin, and that they could put the issues of prisoner exchanges and the return of deported children on the table as a way to start these negotiations.
Kyle Cowan, senior investigative journalist at News 24, speaking to us from Kyiv in the Ukraine. And as we wrap up the show, News 24 Life's deputy editor Kawunda Selisho gives us the latest in showbiz and what to expect in this week's edition of our lifestyle magazine, Hello Weekend. Okay, welcome back to the Weekly Digest. So much has been happening in Hollywood. I don't even know where to start. And rumors around Will Smith's sexual orientation have re-emerged as well this week. Do tell us more.
All right. With the Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith situation, the pair are looking to sue a former friend and assistant, and I'm not sure if they also want to sue the person who interviewed him, who is a blogger known as Tasha Kebby, but popularly known as Tasha K. Mm-hmm. She specializes in gossip, Hollywood gossip, but not the mainstream gossip. Where she goes is where other publications can't go because of who she is. Yeah. She's a blogger. She's connected in the streets. She lives in Atlanta. So the kinds of headlines she'd have are the unethical things the rest of us wouldn't do. And recently she was in a conversation with a former friend and person who worked as an assistant to Will Smith, but was then in the fold of the Smith family. But what Jada and Will are looking to sue Tasha K for is the giving the platform to this person who has alleged that Will Smith was involved in a same-sex relationship with someone whom technically worked for him. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the show All of Us that aired in the early 2000s on SABC1, but it was an American comedy loosely based on Jada and Will's story, their life story. Then the lead actor was Dwayne Martin and Lisa Ray McCoy. Mm-hmm. So Dwayne was a close friend of the Smiths, and this assistant is alleging that then those two were in a romantic relationship, but with no evidence.
Yeah.
So that's why the couple are looking to sue him.
And of course, Kay, Hello Weekend drops this Saturday. What can our audience expect?
Yes, but in addition to Hello Weekend, which we're looking at, I think I promised the story last week, but we decided to hold off on it to mm-hmm. give other stories, bigger stories, more prominence. We are going to be speaking to Nomuzi Mabena, who's been in the industry for over a decade, and fashion has always been a thing that has been inextricably linked to her career, but something she never ventured into outright. So recently she did a collaboration with Factory. So we spoke to her about that, and she reflected on how clothes were a love language in her family, and she often couldn't afford. So from going to being the young girl who couldn't afford to being the young girl who found what we love to call China Mall, mm-hmm. where you have affordable fashion, to now having a collaboration with a brand like Factory. We spoke to her about that. And then we also have a travel review from our travel contributor, Andrew Thompson, about a lovely hotel in Knysna. And then we also have a feature on two South African who are nominated in the IEMMYs, International Emmys, which are coming on Monday. Nice. And when you think I've said a handful, or a mouthful rather, imagine what a weekend we're going to have, with this weekend being the Summers, the Miss Universe pageant, happening, and Rocking the Daisies all in one weekend. So you definitely are going to want to keep it locked.
So we have the Summers,
the Miss Universe pageant.
The Miss Universe pageant.
Rocking the Daisies.
I know on Thursday they had preliminary judging interviews happening.
And we're looking quite good. Brioni is making us proud. She's ranked in a very good position ahead of that pageant. So like we said, there's a lot to look out for, and we have all our bases covered to bring you all this coverage this coming weekend.
Other stories you can find on news24.com include the latest and full coverage of the ongoing war between Israel and Gaza in the Middle East. You can also follow our full live cricket update under the sports section, and you can also listen to our dedicated Cricket World Cup podcast, Beyond the Boundary, by our sports team under the podcast tab. That's all we have for now. Do join us next Friday for the next installment of the Weekly Digest.